Emerson Collins is an actor, producer, and TV personality, and he's here to talk about his new film, A Very Sordid Wedding, and give us his spin on our LGBTQ issues. Hi, Emerson.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about your film.
Well, Sordid Lives is a more than 20-year franchise, so summing it all up, A Very Sordid Wedding is the final chapter that is essentially the story of what happens when marriage equality comes to a small Texas town that is not quite ready to accept it. Del wrote the play of Sordid Lives in 1996. The original film came out in 2000, and then we turned it into a TV series for Logo in 2008. So here we are, almost 20 years later, finally wrapping up this story about this ridiculous cast of characters.
Tell us about the cast.
Well, I mean, it is a jaw-dropping ensemble that Del has assembled over the years. The film stars, of course, from the original Bonnie Bedelia and Leslie Jordan, and then from the TV series Caroline Ray, and then we have Dale Dickey joining us, and then cameos from everyone from Carol Cook to Alec Mappa to Alex Ponovic that's in the new Planet of the Apes movie, and then, of course, a cameo from Miss Whoopi Goldberg herself. So we have a Tony winner, an EGOT winner, a Golden Globe nominee, an Emmy winner. It is a crazy, crazy assemblage of talented people that's really, really a tribute to the fact that Del writes really fascinating and interesting and entertaining characters that actors love to play. And that's how I get them to show up to do a low-budget film.
What was your inspiration for creating this project?
Well, you know, it's Del and I spent a lot of conversation about how to return to Sordid Lives. It's been such a cult classic franchise. And we started the process, actually. He was writing the script as marriage equality was moving from one state to another, and the fundraising process went so long that the Supreme Court marriage equality decision actually came in before we had all the money. So he really felt like that unlocked the script because it gave us an opportunity to address the sort of extreme pushback that we saw culturally and particularly from dogmatic religious people to the advancement of equality for LGBTQ people. So the film deals with that religious exemption law pushback, you know, the Kim Davises of the world, but it also addresses the growth that we're actually seeing in some religious organizations. So we wanted to sort of continue to call out bigotry where we see it, but also acknowledge the progress of those who are growing and changing. And just on a personal side, you know, as a Southern homosexual, the original Sordid Lives was incredibly inspiring to me. It came out, you know, before I was even out of the closet. And it was such a big part of telling early coming out stories. You think about where we were in 2000 when the film came out. Del wrote the play a year before Ellen came out, which sort of launched the national coming out conversation. So we hear continuously how many people used the original Sordid Lives to come out to their family because if you can sort of laugh together, you can address really complicated issues. And so we're sort of doing the same thing with marriage equality in this one.
What do you hope to accomplish with this movie?
Well, first and foremost, to entertain people. You know, our current climate is so dark and intense continuously that to have an outlet as a community where we can laugh together with each other and with our allies, I think that's where you start with art. You hope to entertain. And then beyond that, the ability to use humor to tackle a difficult issue in a way that fosters conversation. There is something about if you can laugh together through something, it's easier to sort of see our collective humanity. Del and I are both sort of ridiculously outspoken people. You know, we've made three films together, one about domestic violence, the second about religion and sexuality, and this one about marriage equality. So obviously we want to entertain people, but we have something to say along the way as well.
Being from Texas, what is your personal commitment to LGBTQ civil rights?
I think about how I am so continuously inspired by the sort of elders of our community, the activists and artists who paved the way, you know, to make it possible for me to be an out, openly gay actor working in Hollywood and on reality television. They sort of opened the doors so we could walk through them and we stand on their shoulders. So I think of myself as an artist first, and then activism is sort of something that I'm involved with really as a result of being a decent human being. You know, I'm far from perfect. I've been a bad ally and made mistakes. So I've worked to educate myself to do better, and then I choose to feel a responsibility to use the small platform I have and the privilege I have really to sort of challenge those in the spheres of my influence to do better as well. You know, I started with educating myself. I think about years ago that I was sort of ignorant of trans issues and went on to educate myself. Del and I did a LGBTQ news podcast for 3 years to sort of share with people who don't have time to pay attention to what's happening in our fight on a daily basis. So I sort of have focused a lot on the religion versus sexuality conversation, and conversion therapy is sort of my particular passion, but doing my part in lots of places.
How do you see our LGBTQ community moving forward in Trump administration?
Vocally, persistently, daily. You know, I say really, I think about we must sort of fight at every level. You know, fighting for equal rights ordinances, you know, against all of the legislation cropping up so many places, particularly targeting trans people, and at the same time fighting for representation culturally. That way we sort of target bigotry in all its form. You know, we have to be accountable to fight for the equal treatment of all marginalized communities, because as LGBTQ people, we are a part of all communities. Black Lives Matter, you know, undocumented immigrants. We are members of every other community. Sort of as a white, gay, cis man, if you only fight for your own rights, that's just self-interest, right? Then following the leadership of our national organizations that do such great work to inform us, GLAAD and PFLAG and Lambda Legal, and, you know, the work that they are doing, and those of us that have the ability to support them financially and to donate of our time. We also have to remember to celebrate the victories as they happen and to take care of ourselves. It's a long fight that we are in for, but staying in it together is how we continue to push forward.
With LGBTQ teens already 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers after facing bullying incidents, what advice would you have for these kids struggling with Trump's administration, especially in the light of Charlottesville?
Well, you know, I think so much. I think all of the work that we do ultimately, you know, is for the next generation, right? So LGBTQ youth are sort of the focus of all the work we do. And I think my first, most important advice would be to not suffer in silence. You know, they face adversity in so many forms, and one of the great dangers can be a sense of isolation. You know, whether it's watching the president target trans military inclusion or seeing white supremacists in Charlottesville chanting against equality based on race, but also chanting against the LGBTQ community, which we saw there, which speaks particularly to the intersectionality for LGBTQ youth that are also kids of color and the challenges they face. So yeah, my advice would be to create a wall of support built of, you know, their peers who love and accept them and adults that they can confide in, whether that means direct family connections or reaching out to the LGBT centers or the Trevor Project if that safety doesn't exist there. But not suffering alone. I think the greatest danger to LGBTQ kids is feeling alone. I think many of us felt that way before we come out. And for kids that aren't out, or even kids that are, it can be even harder. So yeah, don't be alone. Don't feel alone.
How can people get information about A Very Sordid Wedding?
We have a website, averysordidwedding.com, and we are incredibly active on our Facebook page, the A Very Sordid Wedding page. It sort of lists everywhere we've been, everywhere we're going. We've opened this film in 34 cities since the world premiere in Palm Springs in March, and by the time we hit our October DVD release, we will have opened it in 50 cities, which is something I'm very proud of. Small markets and large markets, so we are going anywhere and everywhere we can. And for those we didn't get to, there will be a DVD and iTunes available in October.
What are the projects you're working on?
Well, in all honesty, Del and I are sort of a two-man band doing everything from the marketing to the accounting to the travel. This is certainly our baby at the moment that's almost a complete focus, but he is working on a new TV series we're very excited about that we are getting ready to head out to pitch on, that's set in a small town in the south of the world that he is so beloved in, but different from Sordid Lives, sort of moving on to tell a new set of stories.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
I don't know that there's a question so much as something that I'm sort of learning through being an artist and trying to be active, is letting go of being perfect. You know, there are things I don't know about, even in my own education. I think about times where I've reinforced a stereotype. I've been on a reality television show and still trying to be an actor. And I don't know that there's a big point beyond that other than sort of allowing ourselves to grow together, to listen to the call-outs of those around us, the calling in, to understand and to do a little bit better by each other. You know, I've certainly made mistakes and do my best to do a little bit better every day.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
I do, and this actually ties into that. My current mantra for myself and what I encourage to others is do what you can where you can and push to do a little bit more than you think you can. I think that our current environment can feel very overwhelming, particularly for people who are not full-time activists, you know, who have lives and jobs and things that we have to do. and only a certain amount of time to give to so many issues that there is work to be done on. And so to remember to do what you can, where you can, and then my own challenge to myself is to do a little bit more than I think I can, to push myself a little bit further, but to remember that we can't all do it all, but we can all do something.